Blog Talk Radio.
And Dr. Reggie, who I'm waiting to join us here this morning. So just good morning, and hopefully everybody's doing well today on this lovely Wednesday morning. We will go ahead and let me see if I have Dr. Reggie and Cynthia on the line here just a second. Okay. So it looks like we will be going ahead on then and proceeding on with our book study today. So let me go ahead and open that up with an opening prayer here. So Heavenly Mother, Father, Goddess, God, we thank you for this day. We thank you for all of the ways that you continually show up in our lives and give us what we need to continue to move forward and to grow and to evolve. We thank you for your love and your constant presence with us, and we just ask today that you would just give us right understanding as we proceed in this book study. All right, so I know that it is so, and so it is. Okay, all right, so yesterday we were moving ahead in our book study of Breaking Free from Critical Addiction. We will finish up part two of the book today, focusing on the solution. And then we will proceed tomorrow on to the first step of the four freedom steps. So we will be actually getting into those steps beginning tomorrow. So yesterday, let me go ahead and recap what we actually talked about yesterday about healthy environments, creating healthy environments. One way that we do that is we actually, it's our self-identity. We've learned so far that there are really three aspects to a healthy environment, or I'm sorry, a healthy identification. There is the healthy identification and then the capacity to appreciate, which also leads to a clarity of our intentions. So we discussed yesterday more about mirror neurons and what role they play in our understanding and how we actually receive information. So we went in depth with that yesterday, as well as supporting an inner coach. So today we're going to move into discernment versus judgment. And again, we're under the part in the book that's all about creating a healthy environment. And a healthy environment means, in this context, a healthy identification, a healthy self-awareness of who you actually are. So we're going to pick up today with discernment versus judgment, and then also truth versus assumption. I think those will be two great topics for us to start out with today. So I'm starting out on page 46 of the book, and again, we're talking about discernment versus judgment. So I'll start out there. Because each of us has a false identity to some degree, the ego compares everything we see to our past experiences, judging things as good or bad, more or less, worse or better, etc. Comparisons can only generate judgments of less than or more than, not real understanding. To judge, we must place more value on some things than others. So we never see anything just as it is. We see life through a distorted view of reality. The ego is insecure. comparing itself to others so that it can find meaning to justify the importance of its own existence. Based on this distortion, it also gives very bad advice. Judgments involve comparisons between things that may or may not even exist. For example, if I judge someone as being weak, I can only do that by comparing that person to my idea of a strong person. This idea may be unrealistic and imaginary. For example, most men may seem lacking if we compare them to a professional athlete, screen idol, or the Prince Charming portrayed in our fairy tales. Since we have to evaluate our world in some way, it's important that we know the difference between judging and discerning. Judgments limit perceptions, while discernment expands awareness and accelerates creativity. So I'm going to pause up there just for a moment because that's worth pausing on. She's letting us know how judgments have an adverse effect on us and what the opposite of judgment is, which is discernment. So judgment limits our perception, while discernment expands awareness and accelerates creativity. So in that first couple of paragraphs there, she's really giving us an idea of how judgment actually limits our perception. She's letting us know there that comparisons can only generate judgments of less than or more than. So in order to judge somebody, you actually have to make a comparison. You have to say this is greater than that or this is more than that. And I'm going to continue on here because she's giving us yet another example of judgment versus discernment. So I'll pick up here where I left off. For example, I can discern the difference between a brunette and a blonde without making a judgment. The moment I assume that the blondes are smarter or better than brunettes, I have made a judgment that taints and distorts my ability to see and evaluate blondes or brunettes on their own merit. I am now wearing blinders that distort my view of both. Okay? So she's saying there, the moment she puts a label or calls it, you know, there's a common saying that people use, blondes are not that smart or whatever. That's a label. That's making a comparison. So as opposed to what? Blondes aren't smart. So in order to do that, you have to make a comparison, and making comparisons limits your perception. So I'll continue on there. There is a common distorted view of love and what it means to be in your heart. Some think that being in your heart or loving means actually acting mushy, cheery, and soft, or wearing blinders to reality. In reality, it's just the opposite. No one can define love because defining it would be to limit it, and it is unlimited. However, I do know that love is honest, open, and direct. It does not support illusions of any kind. One thing is totally true about love. Love is fearless. There is no fear in love. For those of you who are familiar with the chakra system, the heart chakra is at the center of our energy body and integrates all emotion with care and compassion. It allows all emotions to be okay. The heart is open to the degree to which we allow things to simply be what they are. That's a familiar sentence, right? She touched on that sentence in the previous chapter, and then she also touched on that when we had her live on the show. So I'm just going to read that sentence again because apparently she believes in the significance of that, and then I want to make sure that I'm putting enough emphasis on that as well. So the heart is open to the degree to which we allow things to simply be what they are. We are not our false identities, our egos, our wounds, or our programming. And as our heart begins to open, we discover our true nature. When we are centered in our hearts, we are being authentic. From there, we can discern the truth because we are simply witnessing what is present, free of all judgments and comparisons. Learning to discern what is present helps us to reach this state more quickly. This is where real freedom is found. So just to recap this part of the book here, Discernment versus Judgment, what I took away from this, and of course you guys are always free to email me at gloria.wells@circlesofprosperity.org to discuss or ask or submit your opinion or comments about anything that we're reading. But what I'm taking from Kaylee in this section of the book is absolutely that the judging part of our mind. Remember, we talked about the judging mind yesterday when we discussed the mirror neurons. We discussed how a judging mind doesn't really know the difference between you and the person that you're judging. So a judging mind is the toxins and hormones and things like that that get released in the body when we're judging. They affect you more so than the other person. So it's good for us to just understand that we affect really literally ourselves during judgment. And not only that, judgment limits our perception. I do like what she had to say about love. I think that was very good that she says that no one can define love, because defining love would actually limit it, and love is unlimited. So she does go on to say there that love, the truth about love is that love is fearless. So there is no fear in love. So I really enjoyed that part of the book as well. So now we're going to move on into truth versus assumption. All right, truth versus assumption. And all of these things before I begin in that section, she's pointing all of this out to let us know that these are the ways that our real identity, our authentic self, and these are the things that we need to address if we really want to have that healthy self-image, or at least become aware of. Not so much as address, but have your light of awareness on these things. All right, so we're going to continue on here with truth versus assumption. Most of the time, we make judgments, assumptions about others and life without really knowing the truth. We live in a world of our own assumptions and conclusions. Some are true, some are false. We assume our future, even though we don't really know what it is. We project our past experiences forward in time, expecting similar experiences, and then we wonder why history repeats itself. We assume people's motives for doing what they do, while we usually don't even know why we do what we do, much less why others do what they do. We assume we know how others feel, which we cannot do with absolute certainty. And we make these assumptions regarding how others feel while we may not even know how we actually feel ourselves. Whether our judgments and conclusions are true or false, they are all just assumptions and not facts. So there she's giving us a really good definition of, or a really good understanding, I should say, of how we assume things. I'm reminded here of the work of Byron Katie. Byron Katie is a renowned author. She's been on Oprah. She's written a ton of really inspiring and good books. And after a really long bout with depression, like a 10-year bout with depression, Byron Katie developed what's now known as The Work. The Work actually has four questions, which is very similar to what Kaylee has here. Well, the questions aren't similar, only that Kaylee has four bullet points and Byron Katie has four questions that she asks for The Work. And the first two questions in Byron Katie's The Work is it true? So whatever assumption that you're making, is it true? And then the second question in Byron Katie's work is how can you know it's really true? So as I read through this material last night, it really brought back up that, because I've studied Byron Katie's work to some degree, and actually I'd like to share an example of how that turned out for me when I was actually studying that work, because that is the basis of her work as well as the information that Kaylee is sharing with us here. We oftentimes assume things that aren't necessarily true about people or situations, and, you know, some of it is taught, like we talked about yesterday with the mirror neurons. So the example that I have is when I was studying Byron Katie's the work, I began to question some of the beliefs that I had really, you know, that really were just beliefs at that point. They were assumptions that were fed into me that I had assumed were factual. For instance, my parents were from the Deep South. They relocated us to the North when we were very young, but they were both born in the South and raised during a time of segregation and things of that nature. So the assumption, the things that I always heard coming up, or the impression that I got from my parents speaking about their experiences in the Deep South, was that the world wasn't a safe place. That literally, if I wanted to be, there was no way I could really reach my full potential in this world because it wasn't safe for me to do so. Like, I wasn't as important as everybody else, you know, as an African American, is what I'm saying. And that's the impression that I really picked up as a child coming up. Well, it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s, probably, that I began to question that assumption. Is that true? I mean, is it true that, you know, life is has to be difficult for us, that we have to work extra hard to get by, and that the world is just unsafe? Is that really true? And once I began to really question that assumption, it really kind of fell apart within no time. I mean, once I asked the question, I began to have experiences of people who were not African American who would help me either with a project or with whatever it is I was going through. So like the universe began to show me, once I began to question the assumption that I was making, the universe began to show me that that was just an assumption and that it wasn't fact. So it wasn't long before I was able to take that assumption, that incorrect assumption at that, and flip it to, you know, the world is here to help me. Everybody I meet is here to help me, regardless of their skin color or what nationality they are or what culture they come from. If I'm in a position where they can offer me their assistance or I can be of assistance, then they're going to help facilitate that, regardless to who it is. So once I changed that perception up and that assumption, then my life became a whole lot easier in terms of dealing with the world and dealing with people in the world, working in a corporate environment. It just became much easier for me to be there. So I wanted to point that out in terms of assumptions, how we have those assumptions, and then we just carry them on. One other thing that she mentioned here in this portion of the book is that we assume people's motives for doing what they do, while we usually don't even know why we do what we do. So that's where judgment comes into play. If I'm assuming, say someone needed to pick me up from work at 2 o'clock and they didn't get there until 3, if I'm assuming that I know why they're late, then that assumption is probably going to cause me to be upset with that person. Versus if I'm just noticing what is, you know, I may not be happy about having to, be at work a little bit longer or being picked up late, but making those false assumptions really do set you up for a negative judgment about the situation. And we know now that judgment limits our perception. So I'm going to continue on here with truth versus judgment. I am sure that you've had the light bulb, what I call a light bulb experience. one of those moments in which a cartoonist would have undoubtedly drawn a light bulb over your head to signal a bright idea. Everyone has had them. How did it feel? In having asked that question of many people, I invariably get the same answer. People use different words, but regardless of how they express it, they always say it felt good. This bright idea usually comes with a sigh of relief or an explanation of, ah, I get it. This universal expression or experience demonstrates that truth always feels good in the moment we recognize it. That is a really important statement. And the last part of this, what we're reading now, what we're going through now, will really drive that point home. But I wanted to pause up there just to restate that truth always feels good. All right? Everyone has a built-in truth meter, and we instinctually know truth when we hear it. Truth and peace are inseparable. They are always found together because knowing the truth brings us peace. And when we are at peace, we know the truth. We are relieved to know the truth, even when it is not something we want to hear. Knowing the truth sets us free to move on with our lives. So that's going back to the famous saying, the truth shall set you free, right? All right, so I'm continuing on there in that chapter to complete this chapter. If knowing the truth always brings peace, then any painful assumption cannot be true. Kaylee actually underlines that part of the book, and I always want to add that extra emphasis when she's showing us an underline, when she's underlining words in the book. She's really trying to draw our attention to that particular sentence. So I'll read that sentence again. If knowing the truth always brings peace, then any painful assumption cannot be true. So that's really relevant for us. If we're making these assumptions about people, one way to really kind of gauge whether or not the assumption that we're making is true is, how does that assumption feel to you? Because if it doesn't feel good, then it's probably not true, because truth feels good. We know that. Like she explained here, when we have a light bulb, a moment where we get an aha moment, as Oprah would call it, that feels good to us. We say, oh, yeah, you know, I get it. I the light goes on, and that's a good feeling. So, and that's what truth feels like. So that's really relevant stuff, I think, that, you know, once you get that and you get this negative feeling about whatever you're thinking about, whatever you're going through, then somewhere in there you're making an assumption it's an assumption in there somewhere that's not true. Okay, so I'm going to continue and finish out this particular part of the book. This is good to, okay, therefore, negative assumptions of any kind cannot be true. This is good to know. While the assumption may contain some factual information, the message distorts the truth. It is like looking at the world through a dark glass that colors everything we see with darkness. While it may be a fact that someone you love died, your sadness is about the assumptions you make as a result of their death. You may assume you will always be alone, that the pain you feel will always be there, or that death is the end of all existence, etc. Those fears are assumptions that may change with time or personal growth. While the fact that the person died will not change, it will only cause more pain if you try to prove you are right about any of these assumptions. Believing that negative assumptions are distortions of reality is a huge departure from how we normally think. However, if you begin challenging yourself to make this simple distinction, you may be surprised at what you discover. people who come to understand how this concept works have experienced major transformation in their lives. Okay? So let's talk about that a little bit, about that particular part of the, I just really think it's relevant. I really do. And I think that there's so much power for us to glean and understanding from really getting this about false assumptions. Again, she says, negative assumptions of any kind cannot be true. Assumptions may contain some factual information. So when I gave the example earlier about being picked up late from work and beginning to ferment about why I'm being picked up late, you know, is there some goofing off, or, is there something going on that I'm placing a negative assumption on? So it is factual that I'm that whoever's picking me up is late. That's a fact. But any assumptions that I begin to throw into that fact are more than likely going to be negative assumptions. Okay, and we now know that negative assumptions lead to judgment, and judgment limits our perception. It's a very limiting point of view to be filled with a lot of judgments and negative assumptions or false assumptions. But Kaylee is really pointing out here in this chapter that if we begin to challenge ourselves to make a simple distinction, as I gave the example as well with Byron Katie's work, is this true? How can I know this is really true? You know, Byron Katie has built an entire organization on those four questions. And two of them have to do with, is this true? So those are just good questions to ask when you're, and I'm sure that as we get down into the four steps to freedom, we will also begin to learn other ways that Kaylee is suggesting that we challenge these negative assumptions. So believing that negative assumptions are distortions of reality is a huge departure from what we normally think. So normally we would assume that negative assumptions are true, that whatever idea or whatever story we've created in our mind about what we're experiencing, it must be true. But remember what Kaylee reminded us of in this section. The truth always brings peace. The truth always feels good. The truth is always light, not heavy. So if you're, whatever you're dealing with, if you don't have that light or that peaceful feeling, then somewhere in there you have an assumption that is negative and false. So you want to address that, or you want to begin to at least become aware of these negative assumptions that you're making about not only people, but situations. And when I say you, I also mean myself. I'm speaking of all of us in general. All right. So that is the end of chapter or part two of this book. Now, as we proceed into part three next tomorrow, I do want to comment on the first part of part three before we close out today, the desire for happiness. Because as I read this section of the book, it melded quite nicely with what we've just finished talking about, which is false assumptions and judgments. So I want to complete that first part of the third chapter, the third part of the book, and then tomorrow we will pick up with the four freedom steps. We'll actually get into step one of the four freedom steps, the four steps to freedom. I always say that wrong. All right, so let me read the first part of this desire for happiness, because, again, it ties in very nicely with what we just completed there. All right, so she starts out by saying, everyone wants to be happy. It is natural to want the freedom to be yourself without defending who or what you are. This is not selfish desire. When you are happy, it helps the people around you. People who love us tend to feel more responsible for our state of mind. Even though they aren't, if we are happy, they feel better. So even though you can't make other people happy, when you are happy, most everyone around you benefits. That's really significant, too. We can't make anybody happy, but we oftentimes spend a lot of time and energy trying to make people happy. What I took from this part is that if we're happy, if we just focus on our own happiness, then the people around us will, number one, pick up on that happiness, and they will benefit from that happiness versus us trying to make them happy. All right, so she goes on here to say that most everyone around you benefits. If a significant person in your life doesn't want you to be happy, then you may need to rethink the relationship. It may not be healthy for you to be around this person. When you are happy, you feel free to do your best in every area of life. Happiness is a practical idea and very simple goal for life that brings real freedom. Our forefathers must have thought happiness was an important part of freedom because the Declaration of Independence states that our Creator endowed us with certain unalienable rights, which includes the right to pursue happiness. However, the pursuit and eventual finding of happiness is up to us. If our goal is happiness, and if criticism, fear, and guilt lower our self-esteem, then these things are not helpful to us in reaching our goal. They have no real value. In fact, negativity of any kind is not useful in the pursuit of happiness. Again, she says negativity of any kind is not useful in the pursuit of happiness. Negativity even gets in the way of simple survival. Since we are free to think whatever we want, it would be useful to discount and devalue all negative or fearful assumptions and messages and get rid of them. They are not true because truth always feels good. So they serve no useful purpose. Getting rid of them, however, may not be so simple. Most everyone has experienced trauma of some kind in his or her life. And I'm not suggesting that you should deny what you feel or have experienced. I'm suggesting that these kind of experiences can leave you with negative assumptions about yourself that need healing. However, unless you recognize the nature of those negative assumptions as false, you will assume they are true, and you will not seek healing. I am also suggesting that you find other ways to process current events in your life. There is a difference between noticing negative events or conditions in the world and making critical assumptions about them that leave you feeling helpless, guilty, or fearful. I want to pause there for just a moment. I want to pause up there just for a moment, and I want to go over that line just one more time. There is a difference between noticing negative events or conditions in the world and making critical assumptions about these events that leave you feeling helpless, guilty, or fearful. So I want to remind you of take you back to the recent events in terms of, like, the events that happened at the school Sandy Hook. Now, I think that what she's saying here is when things of that nature happen, noticing that negative event in the world, if we begin to add critical assumptions to that, like, for instance, about the person who did all the stuff or his parents, or if we begin to become extremely critical and make assumptions about those situations, those assumptions that we're making about that situation don't really affect the situation as much as it affects us as individuals. Because those negative or those critical assumptions about the events, they leave us feeling helpless. They leave us feeling guilty. They leave us feeling fearful. You know, it doesn't really affect the situation for you to add negativity to it. All it does is leave you with all of these feelings of guilt and negativity. All right? And then again, we know that the truth feels good. So if you have a lot of feelings of guilt or negativity around a situation, then observe that situation. Become aware of where you're making a false assumption, because we now know that that false assumption is what's producing the bad feeling, because truth is peaceful. Truth is synonymous with peace. All right? So we're going to move on there and finish out this last little paragraph so that we can wrap up the show. Regardless of the circumstances in your life, you are free to choose how you want to think about the events, and how you think about them can make the difference between being at peace or in a state of conflict. This is the discovery that many great people have made in the midst of extreme conditions, like being prisoners of war. They discovered that they were still free to be at peace in their own minds. In fact, I taught transcendental meditation in a maximum security prison to the worst offenders as an experiment to see if meditations made any significant change in the prisoners. The changes were definitely significant. However, what I remember most about the experiment was one prisoner's experience. He wrote that he came to realize the real bars were on his mind, and now he was free, even though he was still in prison, because he was at peace. Okay? So I want to open it up for any comments that anybody may have on what we've discussed today. So if you have any comments or questions, you can press 1 on your keyboard and then I'll acknowledge you and your comment. Okay? But just in closing out this part of the book, you know, it is so vital, you know, and I think Kaylee does an excellent job of letting us know just how vital it is for us to begin to examine our assumptions. Those assumptions that we're making, all of this stuff affects our ability to have this healthy identification. Remember, I've talked all week about the healthy self-identification is the basis, the foundation, if you will, for being able to live a happy and a productive life, because having that healthy foundation increases your capacity to appreciate things in your life and the people in your life, and then also it leads to you having a clearer understanding, able to set your intentions more clearly. So, and then it's also plays a major role in your happiness, you know, in terms of these false assumptions and negative beliefs. If we're believing everything that we're assuming about people, that's going to lead to a negative feeling for us. So we really want to become aware of that. We really want to perhaps even use Byron Katie's first two questions. And again, we'll get down into the four steps that Kaylee is offering us too. But those first two steps in the work is this really true? And how can I really know that this is true? So those are two questions that I want to leave you with. And I just want to, I also would like to encourage you as you move throughout your day today, I would like to just encourage you to simply place your awareness on things. The goal here that this exercise that I'm giving you is to kind of help you move away from comparisons, comparing things, because when you compare apples and oranges, you're making the actual comparison of apples and oranges, just like Kaylee said when she gave us the blonde brunette example. I can make the distinction between a blonde and a brunette, but the moment I begin to judge either of those, then I'm going into that negative assumption, the judgment and things of that nature, which, of course, is harmful for me as an individual, to my energy. That's not what I want to see, because remember my mantra that Kaylee gave us, I am a loving and accepting person. So if I'm coming from that loving and accepting point of view, then I want to be really careful about the negative assumptions that I'm making about people and circumstances. So as you move throughout your day-to-day, as you begin to move throughout your day-to-day, remind yourself to just observe what is. Kaylee has reminded us in many ways here that the heart is open to the extent that we're able to just let things be what they are. So as you move on today, observe what is, and observe when you're beginning to make those comparisons about people and things. That's a limited perception. So focus on observation today. So I'm going to close with the closing prayer by saying, Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to share this information with our audience, with our listeners. My prayer today is that truth would reign supreme, that they would know truth, that they would walk in their truth. Thank you for their willingness to understand who they are and how they are in this world, and to become better people and have a better understanding. We're not broken, and we know this, God. You made us in your image from infinite intelligence, and we thank you so much for that infinite intelligence. And we know that this is so, and so it is, and so I let it be. Amen. Have a wonderful, blessed, and productive Tuesday, or I'm sorry, it's Wednesday. It's hump day. Time to get over the hump. Have a wonderful midweek. Midday of your week. And remember, observe what is.